setting up shop.
Hello, everyone, and it's us. It's another episode of Setting Up Shop, your favorite maker journey podcast about three makers going on a journey with no rings involved or volcanoes or weird goblin-like creatures. So my name is Dan. I am a woodturner from the UK. And with me, as always, are my friends Rasmus Lowen, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
And Heidi Jacobs, a potter from the States.
Hey there.
That's the United States, not any other states, just for those brief people who might be confused.
I'm in a state.
It's January, aren't we all?
Oh, it's so cold.
Well, hello, everyone. And we are grateful for you tuning in again to us. And hopefully you are pleasantly surprised, because we've got a new season out so soon after the last one finished. And that is one of our things to try and do a lot more, try and be more regular for you good folks, to be the fibre of your audio diet, as it were, and to carry on keeping things going. I'll let those sink in for a little bit, the random British humour. So this episode, we're going to talk about milestones. And it was pointed out before the episode that it can be very difficult to understand what the difference is between a milestone and a goal. I'm not going to look up the dictionary definitions, even though that would probably be really, really intelligent and clever thing to do. In fact, yeah, I am just going to Google that now, actually. Talk amongst yourselves.
No, this is excellent audio content.
Have you made sure you've got the typing of my keyboard?
We can call the segment Old Man on the Internet.
He's just like slamming the keyboard with all of the meat of his hand.
Okay. So a milestone is a significant stage or event in the development of something. You got that? Significant stage or event in the development or something. A goal is typically when a ball or puck goes between two posts. Sorry, second definition. is the object of a person's ambition or effort, an aim or a desired result. So goals are something where you set a target for some point in the future. We've spoken in previous episodes about SMART objectives and all that kind of stuff. So it's a specific thing. It can be measured. It can be active. You can time exactly when it's going to happen. You can say, oh, my goal this year is to hit X amount of sales, or to make this much money, or to make this many types of things, or have some more time to myself, free up some more time to actually have some mental chill out time or play time in the workshop, whatever the goal may be. Whereas a milestone, particularly those who use social media will be a lot more familiar with this, it can be things like, I've hit X number of 100 or 1,000 followers. So it's something that will happen over time that you may not have necessarily sat down and written out and said, I want to achieve this at this point. So we're going to start off by using the podcast itself as an example, as a bit of a almost shameless plug. So at this moment of time in recording, the social media Instagram page for Setting Up Shop has 200 followers. We are well aware that between the three of us alone, we're probably 15 to 20 of those followers. We're not pretending at any point that all of those are fully organic growth. We totally understand. But the average amount of listens to the podcast per episode is about 50 people. So there's clearly a disparity there. What we would like to see, you know, we could say our goal this year is to increase those numbers. That would be a goal, and we'd go out of our way to achieve all of that. And that'd be a primary focus. But the milestone element of it is, the milestone would be, oh, you hit 500 followers on the social media and you hit 100 people listening to every episode. Okay. Whether or not that clears that up for you, I'm not entirely sure. But on a side note to that, it would be really lovely if those two things happened.
Oh, yeah.
The more we get people listening to the podcast, that's the important thing. We're not worried so much about the numbers on Instagram. The numbers could stay at 200 for the next 5 years. As long as the amount of people listening to the podcast goes up, we'd be happy. And we appreciate as well the people who have already commented back or sent us personal messages and stuff. There's not many of you, but that doesn't mean that it's not important. We are grateful for all your comments and your shares and your likes and posts to stories. even if I, as the social media person, managed to get your first name wrong when resharing the story, for which I can only be apologetic. As has been stated by Heidi, old man, fat hands.
Yeah. How's that for ASMR?
It's amazing. I was just wondering which kung fu movie I was in. So Raz, we'll start with yourself. As you briefly alluded to beforehand, what would be a milestone for you? Well, let's backpedal a little bit. Let me rephrase the question. Sorry. Do you have any milestones that are kind of at the back of your mind you're not consciously working towards? And have you had any milestones possibly recently actualized for you?
As we were talking to the subject, I realized that, a cool thing happened last week. And I didn't plan for that. I didn't have that on my milestone list. It wasn't a big goal or anything. But I got an invitation to attend basically a craft market, a blacksmithing market in Sweden, because of sort of the shop I have built up until now. Okay. And I realized that, that's really cool. But I didn't think more of it like more than that. And I didn't have it as like something I really want to achieve. This is not a step towards a goal of being successful. It was just like, when it happened, I realized that, this is really cool, actually.
Yeah.
Nice. So, recognition. Yeah, so that's it. So it's recognition of you and your craft and what you're gifting to the craft has then been manifested in a invitation to an event.
Yeah.
Good word, manifested.
I was just thinking back to, actually, milestones are probably in some ways best thought of as points of joy across your journey. So
I got an example.
Well, I was just going to, elaborate on that briefly, which was to say that, they are things that no matter how big or small they are that happen on your journey, aren't necessarily expected, but they can be used as a record of achievement almost, your progress through your craft. Go on then, Raz.
This is silly, but on the way to world domination, that's a goal. But a milestone would be winning a land war in Asia.
Yes, but I'm not sure how that directly ties into your blacksmithing empire you're building in Norway, unless you have a secondary one building in Asia that you're keeping quiet because you don't want us to know that you're aiming for world domination.
I wouldn't neither confirm nor deny anything.
Okay. Heidi, have you got an example of a real milestone that you're either think would be cool if it happened or has happened?
Well, it's about to happen. I'm going to hit a quantity milestone this year of 10,000 pieces.
That's 10,000 pieces made by yourself?
By me, my hands.
Does that include breakages?
No, it's finished goods. 10,000. Last year, I thought it was only at 5,000. I think we had a discussion about this.
Yeah, briefly, yeah.
And then I was like, oh my gosh, I hit 5,000 a while ago and I didn't even celebrate it. And that's kind of a bummer because I don't even know what the piece was that was 5,000. And then I was starting to go back into my like logs of things that from when I first started. And I'm like, I wasn't even tallying anything for those first few years. So I kind of went back to old photographs and like old invoices and things and kind of got a general idea of how many items were completed those couple of years that I wasn't keeping my ridiculous anal retentive spreadsheet. And I'm at like 8,500 pieces at the moment. So I will more than likely surpass 10,000 this year.
So are you planning on making a milestone piece that you keep? Or are you just going to keep on chugging and go, hey, I've hit my milestone, and then maybe have a drink or something as a celebration?
I don't know. There's nothing calling to me at the moment that I'm like, ooh, I want that to be my 10,000th piece.
Yeah.
And because I'm not exactly sure in reality what that would, because I'm doing estimations based on the first couple of years.
Yeah, you don't know when it would
I
be.
I don't really know. It would be a symbolic piece.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much my heart is invested in that. I mean, let's see when I get closer to it. I mean, I'm expecting probably closer to the end of the year to get there, which with my track record, the last couple of years shouldn't be any surprise that I, make it to that number by the end of the year. But I don't know.
Depends we'll on see. Health and other things, doesn't it?
Yeah, we'll see how excited I get about it. If I get really excited, we'll do a celebration and I'll make a specific piece and I'll design it and be really ridiculous about it. But if I'm just kind of like in production mode and I'm like, yeah, that's great. It'll just be a, yeah, that's great moment. Kind of like the 5,000. I feel like 5,000 was a huge milestone and I didn't even know.
Cool. It's an interesting take, isn't it? Because I'm not sure what I would do either if I actually started keeping metrics. And because I would overanalyze it, unlike me, I know. I would overanalyze it anyway. It's like, do you go by every piece you make, or do you separate it out into ones that, you know, because you've got commission individual pieces, you've got ones that are batches that you make for yourself, and you've got wholesale goods and whatever. And it's like, do you include literally everything you make? Because in which case do I include stuff that I demo at a wood turning demo, or do I ignore those? Well, that's just it. Did I finish it? More often than not at a demo, no.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I've got a ton of pieces that are just greenware that I didn't count.
Yeah,
I have a lot of different columns because I like statistics and data, and we all know that, and I say that every episode. But in my spreadsheet, I have a column that's how many pieces were bisque fired, and then I have a column that's how many pieces were glazed fired, and then within the spreadsheet, as you move over to the right, it's how many are mugs? How many are this particular mug? How many pieces are bowls? How many pieces are plates? How many pieces are like mini cups? I get more ridiculous every year with what I'm willing to do to my brain.
Is there a level of disappointment that you've only just started doing that this year as well? Like every time you add a new refinement, you're like, oh, I wish I'd done that 2 years ago so that I knew how far I'd gone along with.
Yeah, but then I'm like such an asshole to myself sometimes where like I'd be like, why didn't you think of that 3 years ago, you stinking stupid head? And then other times I'm like, yeah, geez, this is supposed to be fun for you. Why are you so mean to yourself? I have a lot of conversations with myself in the studio.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because as we were saying, so a milestone is not a goal. It's not something, oh, yeah, well, if I just do a bit more of this, I'll get to this. But at the same time, you can kind of keep it to one side, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to hit 10,000 pieces this year. That'll be kind of cool. And yeah, that'll be nice. But it doesn't, you don't have to force it. It will just happen when it happens.
Yeah.
The sad thing is for me, like the only milestone that I can kind of see, well, that's true, there's two milestones I can kind of see, even if one of them you could argue is more of a goal. One would be getting a larger van, so that, and it, like, there's no 100% need for me to have a larger vehicle at the moment. There's a need for me to have a vehicle considering mine's broken, different story, but getting a large one would just be like, it would just be helpful. It would just be, you know, I could move more things more easily and all of that kind of stuff that comes with a greater cost, et cetera, et cetera. So there's not necessarily a, oh, yeah, this is a goal for the business. But it's more of that kind of status symbol thing of, I've made enough money that I can afford to be a little bit spendy and get myself something nice that will just make myself feel that little bit better when I'm hauling stuff to a market, and then I'm not having to like crouch down and climb inside the thing to pull stuff out. Or even potentially, you know, you set the market up and it's a 2-day market, you can have an inflatable mattress in the back and you can sleep in the van, save some money that way. That would be, I would say, not necessarily the best of milestones compared to you guys, but you know, it would be a milestone. But the other one that would definitely, more likely you could argue as a goal, and that would be to, you know, have a larger independent workshop where everything is suddenly efficiently laid out. That's never going to happen. You will always move things around. But yeah, having that kind of thing where you go, oh no, this is the Tarrant's shop. This is not a garage on my driveway. This is like a specific business address kind of thing. You know, you've gone full time and made it this is your kind of thing. That would be a milestone. It's probably a goal and a milestone kind of combined into one, you know, and they can be. One of the things I would also say for the two is that a goal can move. You might have a goal at the beginning of the year to do something, and then, you know, illness hits or something else comes along that you weren't expecting. You go, okay, that goal is going to have to be put off by 12 months. Whereas a milestone, if it's something like either of Rasmus or Heidi have described, you don't necessarily have control over that. It's like, you know, I'm going to at some point make X amount of product, you know, that hopefully at some point you're going to get an invitation based on your reputation or merit of stuff you've done to an event. And I think that's quite a clear distinction you need to make, is that you're not setting your year up going, well, here are my goals and here are my milestones and I'm working towards both. You can enjoy them. It's fine.
Yeah, I feel like they should be celebrated.
Yeah.
Because they are like,
waypoints on your journey.
Yeah, they're a sign of you moving in the right direction, or at least they should be a sign of you moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Like if you are measuring the wrong things, then they don't help you at all and you don't feel good about them, sort of. But if you're able to, like Heidi, sort of like, no, her business is making pottery pieces. So of course, measuring the amount she's making year by year and summing it up, that's a huge part of getting to the goal of selling pottery, handmade pottery.
Yeah.
But if Heidi was only measuring the amount of clay she was using, then that would be a very different milestone to reach. Like, oh, I have consumed X number of tons of clay. I was like, yeah, but where are they? What did you do?
What was the goal with consuming 10,000 pounds of clay in 5 years? Yeah. Well, there's like the idea too of like the financial milestones, that maybe you have a goal to be able to say go full time. Yeah. But before you can go full time, there are milestones of financial markers.
Stability?
Yeah, financial stability that you need to hit where, I'm now out of debt and able to start paying myself. And those are milestones to get you to that final goal of being self-dependent and being able to just say, like, I can make a living, a livable wage off of doing this without additional support with another job. And I think, you know, there's things that build into that goal. So there, like, one thing is the finances. The other thing is paying off debts. The other thing is longevity, right? Mm. So if your end goal is to become full-time in your work, then you need to also prove to yourself that you have the longevity that makes sense to abandon all of your other responsibilities with jobs. So, like, if I'm 6 months into something and I just quit my job on a whim because I suddenly fall in love with oil painting.
Yeah.
And I haven't really given myself time to understand what it means to be an oil painter and the space that I need to have for oil painting. And I don't understand pigments and I don't understand how to sell my work. Then I've set an unrealistic goal and my milestones will never amount to what I need financially to be self-sufficient unless I have a benefactor, right?
Yeah.
So you're not going to give yourself enough time to hit the milestones that are necessary to reach that end goal. And that can disrupt so much. Like you can start having self-doubt. You can, you know, abandon something that you love and not give it enough time to percolate. There's like, I see it so often. I mean, don't you guys too? Like,
yeah.
You're like, oh, I really like what you're doing. I really want to learn how to do that. And within 6 months, they've like bought all the things and then they quit their job because that's what they want to pursue. And you're like, oh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We've had people in a day job come in and spend, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 on equipment. They've gone out and this is what they're passionately interested in. And we'll see them like every other day or once a week for 6 to 8 months. And then the next thing you see is that entire kit up for sale on Facebook Marketplace.
Mm.
Like that was their hobby for X period of time and they've moved on to something else now.
Yeah.
Or it was, you know, it was really ticking boxes for them some way or shape or form. And then something happened. They suddenly went, oh no, this is just a hobby. Or, you know, or as, you know, all three of us can attest to, or certainly myself and Raz, it, possibly not so much with Heidi, there's an option for it. The way we create is lonely.
Mm.
Like theoretically, whilst you're throwing at a wheel, you could probably have a conversation with another person throwing at a wheel if you were good enough to be able to split your brain and not lose concentration.
Yeah.
But inherently, the way that Rasmus and I create is too noisy to do that. And you certainly don't want to be distracted whilst striking hot metal or turning something on a lathe.
Yeah.
So the mental strength required to shift from, oh, I'm going to spend 4 hours at a weekend doing that, or one day at a weekend doing that, or, you know, 6 hours a week or whatever it is, to then going, this is my 9-to-5 job. And reality being is I'm going to get maybe 5 hours in the workshop a day, which I'll have to do to generate my product. And I've got the financial responsibility I've got to deal with. And I've got to be a web designer. And I've got to deal with clients. And I've got to do quotations. And I've got no one to bounce ideas off unless I create a friendship circle and allocate some time for it. And I've then got my family to interact with if I've got one.
Right.
Mm. You know, there's a huge mental shift there that we possibly haven't gone into great detail on in the podcast. I think we've touched on little bits of it. But that genuine thing of you want to go full time in a job on your own, that is quite a solitary thing. Hopefully you don't live in a remote area and, yeah, you know, you're able to like have some form of social interaction. Even to those of you out there who are going, oh, I'm an introvert, it's okay. It's not okay, honestly. Like it can be really bad. you need to have a lot of variety to stop your brain from going to places that you don't want to, you know. Like you can end up on a downward spiral quite quickly, and it can be as little as one person saying, oh, I didn't really like that, you know, that one product you made that wasn't even necessarily specifically for them.
Yeah.
It can affect you a lot more than it should, because you don't realize that your mental place is not where it should be. But we're not talking about that this episode. That'll be for a future episode. So you will have to stay tuned.
I do like something that you hit on there when it comes to learning, because I think taking certain classes and even just like pushing yourself to try a new skill, maybe it's adjacent to your main thing that you're working on, but those can be milestones too of like, oh, I just unlocked this new skill for myself or this new knowledge because I, you know, did some experimenting or I took a class or I invited a friend over. It was kind of like along those things. And they tried something and I was like, holy shit, I didn't know you could do that. Let's do more of it. Those things are milestones as well that build you into either better product development, better processes. And, you know, those things stack as well into, you know, your ultimate goals of, being self-sustained or, you know, growing your business to where you can have a separate studio or, you know, all those things.
Yeah. I was going to go back to, it's the old adage. I'm fairly sure it's Japanese, but please in the comments or, you know, whatever, guys, tell us that we're wrong and correct us. But the whole thing of to become an expert, you need to have 10,000 hours. So that idea of having doing 10,000 hours at one thing would then mean you have reached like a master level. And I was thinking about this from the point of view of all three of our crafts. Like, Rasmus, do you count the 10,000 hours of creating things out of metal? Or do you have to say, no, I can only call myself a master bladesmith or axe maker if I have made 10,000 hours worth of blades or axes?
Mm-hmm. Are you a generalist or a specialist?
Yeah, right? Are you a master blacksmith if you've done 10,000 hours of blacksmithing, but all you've done fence railings and like bottle openers? Or do you have to, do you see what I'm saying? It's like, you know, it can be such a thing. And I've tried in the past to work out, well, like you know, realistically, how long does it take to reach 10,000 hours? And when you do the maths, it's you know, we're talking years, because if you average it out, and say, you know, out of a 365-day year or 52-week year, you've got to knock off holiday weeks. You're only going to be working. If we ignore Rasmus for his over-the-top working ethic, which has slowed down a bit since he's got a girlfriend, you know, if you do it on a 36-hour week, but actually realistically it's probably going to be more like a 30-hour week or maybe even a 28-hour week, you know, 1,000... You know, how many 28s go into 1,000? I can never remember which way around to do the maths. But you're talking quite a long time. And none of us as craftspeople, certainly not at the beginning, are going to have the time to give 20 to 25 hours a week solidly working on our craft, even if you're a professional. And that's, I'm not trying to depress people and go, what's the point and why bother starting? What I'm getting at is the milestone can be your first 1,000 hours creating. And the reason why I'm looking at it that way is because the only way you get better at a craft is through repetition and then exploration. the creative side of it is fantastic. But if you want to get better at a particular type of stitch or a particular type of product being made, you know, the particular way something's thrown or a technique is applied, you can't do it just once and then go, oh, well, that didn't work. Or, you know, oh, I'm now amazing at this because you happen to do it just the right way. You have to do it quite a few times. So I had a follow on from that was going to be really profound, but I got really excited and got distracted myself with the 10,000 hours.
Mathing.
Yeah. Have you guys worked it out yet? Because you have to factor in
like
a lot.
24 years.
Yeah, it's something like 20 to 24 years.
Yeah. If you're working 5 days a week, 8 hour days.
Yeah.
52 weeks in the year.
Yeah. Except you're never going to do 52 weeks.
You're never going to.
Because you're going to have at least 2 weeks a year holiday.
It would take at least 24 years to reach that. So if you're one prone to take vacations and, you know, take breaks during certain months, then you're looking at like maybe 30 years.
Yeah.
30 years of practice.
Can I destroy everything now?
Yeah. Go on then, Riles. You've already
break it down. Break it down.
No, this is just because, kind of like Heidi, I also keep track of a lot of stupid things just for the hell of it. And while you were talking now, I went back and looked at how much I worked last year. So I track my office hours, my hours in the forge, and the hours I spend doing other things for the business. Which
you guys make me feel really inadequate with what I track here. Can I just say this right now? So anyone else who's listening going, these guys are insane, I'm agreeing with you. I track literally nothing. Carry on.
Thank you. And I also have a post for other, which sometimes is just driving around doing things. It is standing at markets, or it can be working editing this podcast. But last year, I spent a total of 2,150 hours working.
Blacksmithing.
And 1,300 of those were blacksmithing. They were in the forge.
Okay.
So if 10,000 hours is the metric, then yeah, for me, I might have done that already because that's 7 years of my time.
So 1,300 hours in the forge, though, is also going to include grinding, moving lumps of metal around, picking anvils up and putting them down again.
There's a lot of that.
Your standard weightlifting routine every morning of shifting things around.
Mm-hmm.
Not to detract from any of that at all.
But no, that's a fair point. I haven't spent 10,000 hours doing one very specific thing yet.
No.
I'm very far from that. But it is fun to see like, oh, I have been blacksmithing now for coming up on 12 years. And I have been spending a lot of that time swinging a hammer. Yeah, it's been a lot of different things. It's been a lot of failure. It's been a lot of first attempts at learning. But then also it's kind of fun to realize that, oh, wait, just by distribution of the amount worked, then my average probably is close to 900,000 hours a year with a hammer in hand.
Yeah.
Cool. Not jealous of you whatsoever, Raz.
Well, also, like, we're thinking in the terms of a normal work week is 8 hour days, 40 hours a week, plus like maybe a few hours overtime here and there because things get busy. Yeah. Whereas
you average that out with annual leave and whatever. So it's
But if you're a person that is super passionate about your business and your world typically revolves around that thing that you're passionate about. I mean, I know for myself, if I were full-time, I would be spending more than 5 days and 40 hours a week in my studio. So in some ways, that would offset any time that I took off because I would be working weekends or I would be like working well into the night hours assembling things. So I do agree with Raz. It's probably in the way that we work, it's probably easier for us to say, like, actually, I could probably hit that 10,000 mark in 15 years or 10 years.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if I were just, I don't know, a typesetter or something, like, I'm going to get bored and I'm going to want to go have a beer and I'm going to want to take a full weekend off. And, you know, like.
It's a fascinating conversation, isn't it? Because it's like, how do you define someone as the master at something? So, And as we've already hinted at, like, all three of us are generalists.
Yeah.
You know, like, if I wanted to focus on just one thing, I could be really good at that just one thing. but that limits the market that I can produce product for. And I would say all four of the top wood turners in the UK that I respect and I follow their judgment, three of them have been professional wood turners full time for a long time. One of them has been definitely a professional wood turner for a long time, but his day job hasn't been fully wood turning for a lot of his time. But all four of them will accept such a wide variety of jobs. Like, none of them will just do, oh no, I only make this one pattern or these five patterns of this one type of thing. But all of them, exactly as you guys have said, will be like, oh, in the workshop at 6 this morning because I've got a rush job on and I need to get these done. It's going to be a late one, probably a 12-hour day. You know, and these are guys who are, this is their full-time job. And they're still doing, you know, oh, I need to make sure I'm free this Sunday. So I'm having to do four 10-hour days in a row and then plus another 8 or something like that. And you're like, hang on a minute, what's going on? But that's, for them, that's the way they're working and potentially the cost of their running your independent business. You know, you are your own boss. So you haven't got the other staff member looking at you going, can I go home now? It's like 6 o'clock and I wanted to go socialize and have a dinner and a pint and a whatever it was. But then that's probably where that's the difference between passion and a job.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which hopefully you as our listeners will be well understood of, well familiar with, and hopefully also able to recognize when a potential client's eyes start to drift off and lose interest when you start talking about the nuances between the differences of things you can offer them and possibly make it slightly more complicated than it needs to be.
What's interesting also with the tracker that I keep is because I use it twofold. I use it to understand where I might be losing money on certain things. Like, that's how I figure out my pricing. Like, okay, I'm going to time myself, see how long it takes me to throw this particular form. I now can kind of pull together the information based on the finished pieces, a general idea of how many hours I spent in my studio. And in last year's case, it was like 342 hours around there of working specifically to make finished goods. That doesn't include reclaiming clay and all those other things. But for being somebody that's full-time working a day job, having a family, doing all those things, to be able to say that I did put that amount of time in after hours, like, feels outrageous, number one. And it's a little scary to look at that and realize what I did to my body to achieve that.
So that's something I actually wanted to ask or sort of bring up as a point as well. Just inside of this whole time management thing, like, if you can track the hours you spend on something over a whole year, you know what you did, you know what you earned from that, then you can also think about how that felt for you. And then maybe actually take that number and figure out, like, okay, how far am I from a full-time job in this craft? Can I even imagine doing that to my body?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because depending on age, like, that is a serious concern. Like, especially something as physical, like blacksmithing that I know of. Like, if you were in your late 50s or 60s and you are not already really fit, that might not be something your body can do in an efficient way.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a concern. But I think there's also the other element of that, as I mentioned earlier, that you've got to consider that if you suddenly go full time with a craft business again, you're not spending all that time just in your workshop making stuff.
Very fair.
So you would be doing more than, but if you were sensible enough and able to get over the honeymoon period of, oh, I get to be in my workshop every day, then you would probably regulate it and go, right, it's 4 hours a day is my actual crafting time.
Four hours a day is my craft time,
1 hour for tidy up and pottering around and whatever. And then the rest of my time is admin and merch and you know, marketing, and maybe I'm making a reel or whatever else it is, which might limit your output. But as we've discussed in the past, you know, like Heidi has given an example of it in the past of, okay, I've got an order on, I know I'm doing 3 10-hour days. But then I'm taking time off. You know, I'm just doing 2 days of admin, or I'm doing 2 days of whatever else, if possible. Or, you know, the Christmas ramp up kind of thing.
And in my case there, like, yeah, I spend slightly more than half my time in the forge making something, or at least that is the only place I can go to be productive. I can't really make a lot of money from home, although we have talked about the book I'm writing and the digital plans that I have sold a few of and things like that. But like, I'm quote unquote not making any money from my craft from the computer. That's that's a bonus thing. That's a side hustle. I should track those hours too, kind of, but that's not why I got into the craft.
Yeah, it's not the fun thing to log.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but it would be good to know, just like looking generally at like an office job, say you were salaried, so you do the 40-hour work week. That's 2,080 hours that you're investing in your year, give or take vacation days. Now, what did you say your total was just with the Forge? It was 900 hours or 1,000 hours?
Ooh, yeah, I did 1,300 last 1,300. Year.
So you did 1,300 hours just in the Forge. Now you have to look at, okay, well, there obviously...
You could probably say another 1,300 hours.
You could probably say, another 1,300 hours of all of the other accessory to your Forge time that you're spending. But I digress, because it's not really, I mean, those things are milestones, but like, we're getting a little into the weeds there, I think. Sorry.
That's right. It's kind of, I think it's interesting. It's interesting. I think it's definitely, but I think going back to the point you made just now, Raz, about absolutely you need to consider the toll on the physical body, and I think, you know, you mentioned it as well, Heidi, and it is something, if people are considering, oh, I want to maybe go part-time on the day job and then go part-time on the other thing, or full-time, or whatever it is, the physical and mental difference is a lot.
Yeah,
and I'm desperately not trying to put people off from giving it a go. I mean, you know, I've not had the courage to do it yet, and financially it's not at a place where I could anyway, but there is a huge difference between having a bit of fun in the workshop, you know, maybe 10 to 15 hours a week if you're lucky, and making some stuff and selling it in markets and growing a business, and then doing it full time.
But we can flip that around again, though. Like in my case, doing the digital plans, writing the books, that's not actually really a part of my business model. The book hopefully could be when it's finished, but I can't budget for time.
Well, the book's almost your hobby, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of, so random.
Ironically,
you're a hobby kind of author. Oh, I think I do less now.
Oh, don't tell John, please.
Oh, John.
He's going to listen. He's one of our few patrons.
John's not a hobby writer. He is a real writer.
So he used to be a writer. Now he's an editor.
You're digging a hole.
You want to put it in your book. You're like, his rate's going way up now.
Copywriter.
Never mind. Okay, moving on.
I'm going to make you a shirt that says full-time blacksmith, hobby writer.
you guys have given me an idea.
Okay, go on.
And this will sound really ridiculous, but this is through laziness, and therefore is theoretically efficient. I am tempted to see how much it would be to get a digital clocking in and out device on my workshop.
Mm. You can do that on your cell phone.
You probably can. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, old man. There's an app for that.
Or do you want like an old school punch clock?
You want like a chonk chonk?
I need the I don't want a punch clock, but I need the physical thing of like, I'm at work. It's the mental shift.
Oh, okay.
I'm clocking in.
You're tricking your psychology.
Yeah. Rather than, I'm just going out to the workshop to grab some stuff to do something in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want that thing of, no, I'm swiping in, or I'm tapping a fob, or whatever it is. I'm now in work mode. It's psychology trigger. And then like, right, I'm clocking out. I'm off to do a thing. That might actually genuinely be something that I'm might have to look into if it's not ridiculously expensive.
I like that idea, actually.
Because it would be easier, and then it could still feed to an app. It can still feed to like a spreadsheet or whatever, but I can then just monthly look at it, or end of the year look at it kind of thing. And then depress myself like you guys sometimes do with how low some of the figures are.
Just a little bit about that. I use Google Maps to keep track of my hours because I commute to work. Granted, it's 15 minutes drive on a good day, but that gives me sort of the Google timeline of saying like, oh, you went to your car, you went to the workshop, you're there, and then you're not. So it's like, cool. I don't need to actually keep track of all that much. Like specifically, I can sit down at the end of the day, end of the week almost, and say like, okay, I were in the forge these hours. Ideally, I have a good idea about how productive I were. I actually try to keep it like a work diary, writing down like the clocking in, the clocking out time, what I did, what happened, if anything.
It was snowing again today. I didn't write that.
That's it's still snowing.
Law date 2043.
As long as you don't start your Japanese log.
We've massively strayed away from our original topic of conversation, but it's been a fun diversion, several of them, in fact, I think.
My original point that got digressed severely. I ended up having the hobby of doing all of the bonus things, right? Yeah. The book and the digital plans.
Yes.
If your body is not capable of spending that excessive amount, that's the word, in the workshop, like carrying stuff, doing the manual labor, then actually maybe leaning more into the writing, the digital plans, the teaching is better for you, plus or minus creating content on YouTube and that kind of stuff.
Did you have a long roundabout way of saying if you can't do it, teach?
I guess. But because of physical reasons, not because you can't do it. Not because you don't know any better.
Oh, shit. We're just offending people left and right here.
Well, yeah. I mean, I teach mine as well. So I think, Heidi, you're the only one who's bowing out of this example.
Although,
but you do make a very valid point, Raz. Yeah.
Thank
you. Absolutely.
It is valid.
And in my defense, teaching is one of the core pillars of my business.
It's a lot of what I do.
It is, and it's fun.
It also helps sharing the craft and keeping it alive and all that.
It also checks that box of social experiences.
Yeah, it does.
So I would like to, since we've derailed the original point anyway, there was something that sprang to mind for me when we were talking about the interacting with other creative people. This isn't an exercise that I've consciously done, but I think I've had conversations like this in various formats. I would love to have a thing where someone of a craft brings forward a problem they're having. Like they've got a vision for how a piece should look or how a thing they want it to be, but they can't figure out how to get it there. And rather than me going to another wood turner and saying, how do I problem solve this? Taking it to like a blacksmith or a potter or a seamstress or a glass blower or like, you know, various other things and saying, how would you make this? Like if you were doing it in your medium, how would you make this and can you show me? Because I strongly suspect that there'd be some technique or something somewhere that you go, oh, that's a bit like when I do this, oh, I could do that like that. And the reason why I bring it up is actually this is clearly a thing for me at the moment, going back to the working alone thing. Like it's not collaboration, but certainly having the conversations with other creative people to help spark trains of thought and help spark the problem solving. And I alluded to it earlier, and I'm sure we've talked about it in previous episodes. If you are already someone who is fortunate enough to work on your own in your own workspace, and you're just listening to us whilst you're bimbling around the workshop, first of all, hello, well done. Excellent. Thank you for listening. Please tell people. Second of all, if you haven't already, I would strongly encourage you to schedule like an hour a week to video chat with some creative friends. Like literally say, hey, you guys, I know we're all doing, you know, whatever we're doing, but can we schedule a tea break chat on a Friday or something? And literally just sit there, and it can either be a catch up about random stuff, or maybe it will be I'm struggling with this particular thing I'm making. Has anyone got any ideas? Because I think you'll find it as valuable as I do coming and talking to these guys. I know we're having conversations that are general. I know we're having things that are, we're sharing information about our journey. But I think you can hopefully also tell that we're having fun at the same time while we're doing this. And we do hold each other accountable for a lot of stuff and push people on when, you know, things aren't helping. And we're recording this still in January. I'm pretty sure this episode will come out not long after, if not near the end, can't remember. And it's a tricky month for a lot of creative people for many, many different reasons. And this is a little thing that if you can nurture it and keep it going just once a week, that little video chat, I think it will be invaluable. And I would encourage you to do it if you don't already.
Yeah, I second that. And it could also be as simple as in your lunch break, just call up a buddy, call up someone else at your work that is on the same journey, working with something similar. Maybe just either if just to talk to a human being about your day, what happened, or to problem solve something or get inspiration. All of that is valid. Yeah. Doesn't need to be big or formal. It's just someone.
Yeah, but make sure it's someone real and not an AI voice generator.
Like me?
No one could AI generate your accent, Raz.
In case we didn't know, most of Norway is AI.
No, it's Skyrim. Most of Norway is Skyrim.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you get those two confused.
Yeah. Dan, on that note, last time we talked, you and I kind of put ourselves to a challenge to get into our shops after an extended period and, you know, not me health-wise, I wasn't looking forward to it because I thought I was going to like overdo it. Yeah. And you were having some challenges with like, what would I even do? Why go into my shop? I did throw both on Saturday and Sunday. I threw two pieces on Saturday. So I managed about an hour or so in the shop throwing those vessels. And then I pushed myself a little bit more on Sunday and I did an hour and 45 minutes. Don't really have much to show for it, but I was like, it's a day of play. Yeah. What did you do? I saw you made one piece.
Yeah. So I did go out on the Saturday and I consciously told my wife and said, no, the challenge has been thrown down. I need to go out there. And she was grateful to you for that. And I did turn a piece, which it didn't fight me. That's not quite right. But there were a couple of small problems that I struggled with it that I shouldn't have done, but that was probably because I haven't been out there for a while. And it was a variant of timber that I haven't turned in a little while. So I'd probably forgotten some of its uniqueness and how to combat that, or account for it, I should say. So yeah, I made one piece. And it was interesting, actually, because I tried to do something different with it. So I turned a bowl, basically, and I tried to roll the top of it to round it over. Because for some reason in my head, I was like, oh, that could look really interesting if I do this. And I'd been really happy with the piece. And so I rolled it over using, I cheated and I just sanded it with a power drill. And then when I stopped and I looked at it, and I'd taken it off the lathe at that point, which is always fatal. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, that looks like a beginner's bowl. Because one of the things a lot of beginners do is they don't define the start and the finish point of transition and the wall thickness. You know, you don't have that. Like if you look at the top of a bowl, certainly a wooden bowl, it's almost got like a flat top, which kind of slants somewhere or whatever, but there are edges. There's like, this is definitely the outside. This is definitely the inside. And this is the rim. And that might have decoration, it might be wide, it might be narrow, or whatever it is. But my first few bowls that I made were all kind of like this. It didn't flow from one shape to the other, but it looked like I'd kind of gone, oh yeah, and then I'll pause here a minute, and then we'll go around the outside of the shape. I'm not sure if I'm describing that properly, but like if you were to slice through it in the middle, that would be one part that's not clearly defined, whereas the rest of it is.
Yeah.
What I should have done was I should have been able to see that on the thing and step back and then just slice it off and then I've been happier with it. But I allowed that to put me off from at that point. I had to go in. There was stuff we needed to do. But I then didn't go back out the next day because I allowed that to annoy me and I allowed it to be an excuse to not go out and do anything else. Yeah. So I'm frustrated at myself for that. But we absolutely will share the images on social media when the first episode's dropping. So hopefully if you haven't seen them already, it's because you're not part of our 200 people. So you should follow and subscribe to our Instagram page and you'll hopefully see those images. So yeah, so it was interesting because you did push me to go out there and it was great. But I then learned that little bit about myself, about feeling like I'd stepped backwards a little bit and therefore it messed with my head a little bit. So it wasn't a negative thing to go out. Absolutely wasn't. It was a good thing to go out.
Yeah.
I just need to push past that point and go out and make some more things. I haven't got an excuse this weekend because I need to make some prototypes for a commission that I thought was due mid-February, and the guys moved the goalpost and said no, he needs it within 2 weeks from now. So I need to do some prototypes this weekend, deliver them Monday, and then I've potentially got 30 small matching things to make within a week. So that'll be fine. But Rasmus also went out and he made a thing as well. He made a knife.
Yeah. So a slightly more context, which is also an accidental milestone, and realized I hit and are doing more of, a lot more of this summer, this next 6 months. I had the first guest teacher come in and teach a class in my workshop this weekend.
That looked like fun.
Which was basically a moment of realization in mid-December of saying like, oh shit, I don't have the time to properly prepare for this class. Let me call an old friend of mine that is excellent at this specific thing and ask if he wants to come and teach the class for me. And luckily, he was able to do that, because then I could go on vacation and relax instead of having to cut that short and run back to Forge and do all of the prep work. So I felt good about this. The class was a kitchen knife class, but it turned out into being a very specific Japanese kitchen knife class, because that's kind of his speciality now. The fun thing is, he took his first blacksmithing class with me nearly 7 years ago. And now he comes back and he schools me absolutely on how to make kitchen knives. And I kind of love
because
that.
Because he's specialized.
Because he is specialized. And that was kind of fantastic. And we chased all the students out at the end of the day, and then we had a bit of a play. So because I was more assisting with the class, I didn't make a knife for myself while he was teaching. I was more running around taking care of a few other things. So after class, he's sort of like, okay, we have this scrap bit that because we started with too much material and then we had chunks off. Let me see what I can do from this bit. And it was barely enough to make a knife out of, but it was also like just the perfect amount when you know how to do it. So after having seen him, having him guide me through it, I made my first proper Japanese kitchen knife, a Gyoto style for the nerdy people out there.
Love it.
So then... Yesterday, I took the other scrap bit we had and I made another one, which looks horrendous without his help. But it's also big enough so I can grind it back and make it look very similar.
That's so great. Oh, I love you guys. So good. So good.
It's good fun. It's good fun to challenge each other in that way. And kind of, and as I say, you know, we use the phrase a lot, but hold each other accountable and kind of move it along. That's pretty much it for this episode, unless anyone's got anything specific they want to bring up. We did talk about milestones briefly. It is something to be aware of, and it is something to celebrate. Celebrate those points of joy along your journey. If you think you've not got any, don't be silly. There'll be at some point in time where you've realized, I really enjoy what I'm doing. Hey, someone might buy this. Oh, someone is willing to buy this. Oh, they're willing to actually give me more than I thought they would. All of those things are milestones, you know, and they will just keep coming if you keep on at your craft. We hope you do. We hope you enjoy what we're doing here. I'm going to keep teasing. We had a brief conversation before this episode started about merchandise. We've already got some designs up together. Nothing groundbreaking at the moment, but we will let you know when we're going to launch the merchandise site so that you can crash it within seconds with this vast amount of you who are going to go on there and purchase all of the things. But we need to do some testing of that and get some samples to each other first so we can rep our merch and also see what the quality is like. But in the meantime, please listen to the back catalogue if you haven't already, or if you have, listened to it again. Please tell some friends about it. Introduce us to other people. In all honesty, the best thing you can do for us to get our milestones hit is to tell other people about us and to rate us on whatever app you're using. You can do it on Spotify as long as you've listened to at least two episodes. You can do it on Apple Music, all of those places. It's free to do. If you don't like the podcast, you won't have listened through to it this far, so it doesn't matter, so you don't need to leave a review. But please, yeah, it would be helpful. I don't want to sound like I'm begging, because I'm not. We're going to carry on at the moment. But it would just be nice to get to a point where the costs of the podcast pay for themselves, and we can fend off having to get sponsors or ads and things like that in it for a little while longer. But anyway, it's been lovely to chat to you two again. So as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. My name's Dan. You can find me at tarrants.co.uk, and that's on Instagram and on my website. Heidi, you can find at Whitehall Pottery. Erasmus, you can find at Erasmus Lowen. And you can find all three of us at setting_up_shop, S-H-O-P-P-E, on Instagram, and www.settingupshop.com. You might have to put the www in the front. For some reason, for me, whenever I try and go onto our website, if I don't put that in the front, it tells me it can't find it. Not sure why. But anyway, until next time, goodbye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.